Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
This is Examine Life. The unexamined life is not worth living. We hope that you examine your life every day, and we hope that our program helps you examine your life. Do you examine life, or do you just look at life with basic assumptions that you haven't checked?
Tonight, our topic to examine is happiness, the essence of happiness. In these days of short hours of daylight, there's something that's referred to as SAD, which is seasonal affective disorder.
And that has to do with the level of sunlight that you receive affecting your emotional state.
The UV light, and a lot of people get blue moods. They get depressed. And there are some things you can do, vitamin D3 and other things. And the UV light, a lot of people in the far north actually have the light in their house to help them get over that moodiness or that depression or that sadness. But tonight we're going to talk about happiness. And one of the things of happiness is the lack of sadness and sorrow.
That's right. Happiness is a relative thing. Life, not taking into account the spiritual realm, is a constant balance of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. We don't want to think of it that way because it makes us seem shallow, but it is that way. Pleasure arises at the end of a cycle of discomfort or dissatisfaction of some sort, which causes you to act to change the situation. When you change it successfully, you have pleasure or joy. And that's brief, but before another cycle begins. But if we don't have that period of discomfort or relative suffering, we can't pursue or realize the pleasure part. When we have a balance and of discomfort and pleasure, our life is happy for that period of time. So I wonder sometimes, were the founding fathers wiser than they knew when they used the phrase pursuit of happiness? When you pursue happiness, such as in work, or making your own deals, or finding your own way for a job, or building your own business, it is yours. When someone gives you what you need, that's hollow. It takes away the fear of hunger, lack of shelter, and it also takes away the ability and the desire to overcome obstacles and achieve real owned happiness.
A lot of people try to achieve happiness through drugs or some other stimulus because your endorphins, which are manufactured as hormones in your system, dopamine and serotonin are the chief ones, that drugs can alter that. Our body's a chemical machine, and drugs such as psychedelic drugs or pot or any of these other drugs affect that chemical balance and can affect our dopamine and serotonin.
And see, I see that as temporary pleasure, which becomes more difficult to obtain as you continue to use the drug because your pleasure center requires more and more. Whereas I see happiness as a condition, a state of your life at some kind of determined length of time, like a happy month or a happy day or a happy year, that's balanced by a time of unhappiness. But when you're in balance between happiness and unhappiness, your life is good. A person who has to have drugs to feel pleasure, I don't think is happy.
No, and oftentimes that drug-induced happiness is not really happiness at all, is it is lack of sadness that they are trying to escape, and that's why they go to alcohol or drugs.
Right. In the beginning, an addict of most of the drugs is seeking pleasure, and they get pleasure, short-term pleasure, from the drug. But what happens is the pleasure center, because it didn't create that dopamine or those endorphins, it requires more and more. And so in the end, it's as you said, they're trying to avoid sadness or depression by taking the drug. It doesn't give them pleasure anymore. It just kind of staves off the depression for a few minutes.
Right. And happiness can, you know, it's a sense of euphoria in some ways. It can be from sex or love or creativity or the sense of accomplishment. And oftentimes it can be associated with another person that you have enjoyment with. It can even be a pet, a horse, whatever it is that causes you pleasure in your life.
Right. And see, that's how I define it. I define that as pleasure. And again, to me, happiness would be that sex or whatever brings you joy, that it's balanced in a life that produces and helps other people. And you have this balance to your life, and that's when you're happy. But it's a mixture of sad moments, pleasurable moments, joyful moments that are balanced in such a way that you stop and think and you go, yeah, I'm happy. You know, yesterday my car was broken into, but in general, I'm happy.
And happiness really is a state of mind. It's if you're one of those kind of people that think they're never happy, sometimes it's your choice. They believe that music can cause you happiness, but only if you're looking for happiness, studies have presumed or confirmed. So your outlook, your state of mind can affect your happiness. So happiness with another person may never happen because you're miserable.
Right. Happiness, I think, has to come from inside, which is why I made the comments earlier about the pursuit of happiness. When you do something to make your life better, you have happiness because it doesn't depend on anyone else. That's the kind of pleasure or joy that you can maintain because it comes from within you. When you rely completely on someone else, such as sex or love, when you demand that from them to make you happy, you can never truly be happy. When it's a partnership that you make each other feel pleasure or joy, and there's other aspects to how you feel about that person, then you're happy because it's a self-fulfilling kind of a thing. Whereas some people actually depend on others for their happiness, and that can never last.
Well, you can't look to the external for your internal happiness. It is a state of mind from with you on the inside, and you pick your reactions to people and events. And if you always pick a negative reaction to everything, then you're never going to be happy. If you pick, even if it's a subtle joy from something that you may or may not be a part of, then you're more likely to find that happiness.
And some of the studies on happiness, they talk about how it's really self-reported. The only way that you can research happiness is to ask people if they feel happy. And so if they say they're happy, then they must be happy because they're the only ones that can determine if their life is happy. Because for some people, pain brings happiness.
Well, it's your perspective. Only you know if you're happy, and it's your perspective of your even degree of happiness. Is it for the time being? Is it in the moment? Is it, you know, my life is content? It's going the way I expected it to. So you have this sense of happiness.
Correct. I just think it has a balance, and happiness occurs when you have a balance of pleasure and pain and suffering and joy and achievement and loss. And because you have to have one, that's the concept of yin and yang, besides just male and female. It's about everything is relative to everything else. And so happiness has to contain the seeds of joy and sadness.
Yes and no. I disagree a little bit on this because I think happiness is a reaction. It's a positive reaction to the elements in your life. And you don't have to have catastrophe and horrific terribleness in your life to be happy, because without it, you're not going to be happy. I don't buy that at all. I think it's your perspective of your life and your reaction to your life that can make you happy without all that other catastrophic events happening.
Well, I will have to agree to disagree. Think about the end of World War II. The horrible, horrible things that happened in that war and the great joy at the end of the war.
Well, that's true. You know, that's like saying pregnancy is miserable and at the end you get this wonderful happiness of a baby. Well, it's not necessarily miserable pregnancy for everybody.
No, that's true.
It's their perspective.
Right, that part's true. I'm saying that you're happier, that having had sadness or misery can make the opposite of that more happiness-inducing.
It can be more intense,
right?
Than ordinary happiness. That, yes, after something horrible happens to you and something wonderful happens, then, yes, you can be more happy. But I don't think that you have to have that horrific imbalance in order to come back to happiness.
No, but you're right. It's a level. If you have a little bit of suffering and you fix it, you have a little bit of happiness. If you have a lot of suffering and you turn it around, you have a lot of happiness. That's the balance.
Okay, we'll disagree on that element of to happiness.
Another cycle of life.
Yes, I think it's part of us. By the way, we had discussed before about how DNA affects our brains and things. We now know that our thoughts affect our DNA, and that is good or bad for our lifespan. If you have a happiness outlook, chances are you're going to have a longer life. If you're happier and content than if you're angry and negative all the time.
That's right. That's the other thing about happiness. I've met many people in my life in all sorts of situations, and I can say I've met a lot of people who have what I would consider to be a miserable life and are happy, or should have a miserable life, just because of their circumstances, and they're happy. And well, I think happy is an internal thing, an attitude. That, again, it can be more intense, and we can have that whole discussion sometime, but it's basically how you react to what happens to you, either positive or negative.
Right, and I think we often judge people who should not be happy because it's the values we have or hold in society. Like, we often think autistic children are miserable when, in fact, they may be very happy with the conditions of their life because it's comfortable for them. They derive pleasure from the environment that they live in. But we on the outside think that they're unhappy when, in fact, they could be very happy.
Or maybe we aren't aware of that negative thing that they were going through before they came to this happiness.
Okay, we were talking a little bit about seeking pleasure. And when you extend yourself to the benefit of others, you do it because it gives you pleasure.
And that's not the same as hedonism. Seeking pleasure is not a negative thing in and of itself. It's pleasure comes in many forms.
Yes. And, you know, helping others gives you a sense of joy or happiness often, be it in the limelight or behind the scenes helping others secretly that you get no recognition for. It is a incredibly joyful thing.
I find that that extremely true. You know, I give food to the mission people sometimes, and I do little things for people. And I'm like everyone else. I like the applaud sometimes of people appreciating what I do. But it's a secret joy that you get when you do secretly something for someone that they'll never know it was you, and it makes them happy.
And somehow that gives you a sense of happiness. And it's external. The stimulus was that external, your physical action that did it. But you derive a great deal of pleasure, even though you're not sharing it with anybody. But I also think that some achievements in life need to be shared to derive the full pleasure of them. Something that you accomplish, if you have someone to share that with, say it's climbing a mountain, if you're a mountain climber, to share that with someone is far more pleasurable and gives you more happiness than for you to make that achievement on your own.
Right. And that's a function of some things really are meant to be enjoyed by more than one person. And some people will enjoy something more just because they are more gregarious, and they are the type of people who get more enjoyment when they're with other people.
Well, sharing can be can cause you happiness. Sharing time with a pet. You know, a lot of people sitting on the sofa who live alone and they just have a cat that they pet gives them pleasure and makes them happy. That pet, in his response, I don't care if it's your horse and you go riding and that gives you great pleasure and happiness. You derive it from the company of that horse.
Right. It's just a matter of your perspective and what you enjoy. You know, we talked once about many people with autism are not, I think Temple Grandin was good at explaining this, are actually happy by themselves. They're not getting along. They are truly happy when they're alone. So We need to quit projecting on them that our need to be gregarious and let them be alone when they need to be alone because they are happy.
And a lot of people find happiness from company and others find it in solitude. There are many people that have moved out to the middle of Timbuktu or Alaska or somewhere else in the wilderness where they can be alone because they derive a great deal of happiness from nature, Mother
right.
Nature.
And again, it's all relative. There could be someone who moved out to be alone like the Unabomber guy because he's crazy. But but you're right. There are many people who just want to enjoy nature and they're happier when they're not around a bunch of people.
And they have proven that coming in contact with nature does relieve stress and cause you a sense of happiness. Digging in the dirt, growing a garden, all of these things they've proven gives you a sense of happiness. Watching life come to, you know, spring in through a seed breaking ground can cause you happiness. It may or may not be a sense of accomplishment, but it's a sense of contact with nature and the rebirth of life.
If that's the kind of thing you enjoy.
Well, chances are you wouldn't be out in nature if you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, you could know. Be.
You might be forced outside.
Auto accident in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you ask people now. I mean, they have whole retreats now for people just to leave their technology behind.
Yes.
And it's really, it's fascinating because it's the contrast that makes a difference. There's nothing evil about the technology, but now it's inundative. It's around us everywhere. So it's the contrast. You're happy at these retreats simply because you're kind of away from all the technology. It's the difference that matters, not which one you're with.
Is that why we get happy on vacation? Because we get away
from
it all?
Some do and some don't. I'm recalling the movie Vacation with Chevy Chase. It's all relative. Some people, I remember once a trip to Disneyland, being a young father and being full of myself, causing discomfort in the family because I wanted everyone to have fun so badly and they weren't having enough fun to make me happy. And so
it was all about you, not them.
I finally realized that because I do tend to live the examined life. Realized what I was doing, and I calmed down, and everything was fine. But I was literally overstressing on making sure everybody had, like, super maximum fun. And they were doing just fine.
Yes. Especially kids. They can find joy and fun in anything. You leave them alone long enough, and they'll find their own happiness.
Yeah, and many times they're having fun when they don't look to me like they are, but they're having fun.
Yes. One of the other things I want to bring up is... I recently heard something about optimism versus pessimism. And a wine drinker sees a half a glass of wine and considers it half full. A beer drinker sees a happy glass of beer and it's half empty. So happiness is in your perspective, being optimistic or pessimistic on your view of life.
So a happy beer drinker sees the glass half empty?
No, beer drinker, when he sees a glass half, it's only got half beer in it, it's half empty because he wants a full glass of beer. A wine drinker,
okay.
Do I have to explain it? It's not nearly
I guess
as...
you do. I'm not much for wine.
Okay.
I find most of it pretentious.
You only fill a wine half full and it's considered the right serving of wine. Never mind.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, that's not the way I used to drink wine back in my 20s.
Optimism and pessimism. If you're an optimistic person, you see life on the better side most of the time.
Right.
If you're pessimistic, everything is not right.
And that goes back to what we were talking about, that happiness comes from inside. You can have all, I mean, the lotto thing, when you read the stories about the lottery winners, generally they don't turn out to be a positive experience for people. And so the happiness has to come from within. Again, the lottery money was something given to them where if they went out and earned that much money, they would be much more happy because it comes from within themselves.
Yes. And attitude, your attitude of whatever comes to you in life, how you receive it, how you respond to it. If someone insults you and you respond to it as, he's a jerk and I've got my feelings hurt, is one kind of response. And yet you can choose to respond as, well, he's entitled to his opinion. I don't think that way.
Right. He might be having a bad day. Maybe he's not a jerk all the time.
Right. So a lot of that optimism, pessimism comes from your attitude towards what's happening to you. And you choose that response. You choose how to think about it and how to accept or, you know, discount that other person.
Right. It's always an internal choice. And if we go away with any message tonight about happiness, it should be that only you can make yourself happy. And when you look to external things to make you happy, that's just not going to happen. It's just not in the nature of how happiness is built, I guess.
And it's not anyone else's responsibility to make you happy. It's not your parents' job to make you happy. Their job is to keep you safe and to educate you and to prepare you for life. Your spouse is not responsible for your happiness. Yes, they can contribute to it and they can make your life miserable, but they're not responsible for how you react. That's your responsibility to give them the benefit of the doubt and to try and make their life better. That's the point of marriage, is you're both trying to appreciate one another and make life easier for one another. So it's not their responsibility to make you happy.
I can tell you from experience that they can try as hard as they want to make you happy, but if you're determined to be angry or sad, you're going to be, and there's nothing they can do.
Yes.
I know as a human being that's a fact.
And the other thing, we briefly touched on the blues and, you know, the winter blues and how UV light is a big impact on all of us. If you feel depressed all the time and you are severely depressed, let's say, you need to get help. You need to be able to find a solution to that, because no one deserves to be unhappy, miserable, depressed all the time.
But you want to be sure that it's actual clinical depression.
And one of those ways to do it is to get help from a doctor, try vitamin D3, try a UV light, especially this time of year when we're in the dark of winter. And we have the gloomy days where it's going to rain or appears to going to rain every day. And we can get moody and depressed very easy. And those blues can take effect and we not even notice it.
The thing that makes the examined life so powerful is that if you're constantly examining yourself, I mean, not in a neurotic way, but just trying to analyze your own feelings, you can realize that there is something having an effect, like the seasonal affective disorder or something else. And once you know that, if you're a human being, you can say, well, I choose not to let it affect me that way. And you can have a real effect.
A lot of it is the power of positive thinking, that you can overcome it, but sometimes you can't. And just having that UV light, or when the sunshine does come out, sit out in the sunshine for a half hour, that can improve your mood dramatically without any medications or prescription drugs or anything like that. But you have to put forth some effort to achieve that.
Right. I have a mild form of that. Whenever the overcast days, I love the coast and I would love to live there, but with all the overcast that they have, it definitely has an effect on me, but it's an effect that when I recognize it, I can combat it. It's relative. Once you realize that it's the case, and you can do things to help you. I mean, one of the things I like to do is dark chocolate. But
women like that chocolate idea. They use it all the time.
Chocolate's very healthy.
A lot
of antioxidants.
A lot of
it's good for your brain. Has antioxidants. Chocolate's good. But there's just mental things you can do. You're a human being. You have the ability to examine yourself, to understand an effect that something's happen on you, and you can reduce the intensity of that.
This is common with women in menopause. One of the things that you recognize as you go through menopause is you're not happy. You're almost always miserable. You're moody. Everything's a disappointment. Everything is frustrating. And a lot of it has to do with the hormonal changes, and they affect your moods. And for menopausal women, it's critical that if you're going through that, to talk to your doctor. There are creams you can use that are not prescription estrogen replacement therapy, but the progesterone is the happy hormone for women. And even women who have had children, after pregnancy, there's something called postpartum blues. And it is an imbalance of those hormones. And you need to talk to a doctor about it. It is real. It's not in your head. And you need to talk to someone about it.
But having said that, just always be sure that your doctor is looking at the whole picture, because too often we have medications as the primary source of treatment, and we find people who are being treated with these hormones ending up with worse depression or ending up with other diseases. So you just want to be sure that you have a partnership with your doctor, and you just don't go and say, I'm having menopause and I'm sad and you need to fix it. It's a partnership. Medicine is not one person fixing another person. It can't end well.
And we go back to that positive-negative mindset. There's something called the power of positive thinking, and it gives you optimism in the face of challenges and a sunny disposition, you might say. And the negative thinking is draining. It's exhausting to you and those around you. If you've ever been on a project where someone is always negative, it drains the life out of the project. If they're positive, you work with someone that's positive, it's always finding solutions to whatever becomes a problem or surfaces as a problem.
Right. Well, if you have any situation where you've decided that it's a bad situation and there's nothing you can do, well, then there's nothing you can do because you've stopped looking for options. Once you've determined there's nothing to do, you automatically are not going to search for options. So the positive outlook has a mechanical basis. I mean, it's not just a philosophy. It has a reality basis that when you have an open mind that no situation is insuperable, you'll continue looking for solutions. When you've decided it's unsoluble, you will not look. So you won't find them.
And there's a power behind that. The power of positive thinking is you get a bright idea, say, to solve a problem, and it might not be the answer, but it's infectious. And the person next to you starts thinking, well, maybe that would work if we tweak it this way, or how about this idea? It can be very beneficial to everybody involved to have that positive thinking. There is power in that and synergy as you project it out, as opposed to negative as you project that out. Everyone gets depressed and they don't want to do it. And pretty soon the whole thing falls apart.
Right. And the problem with monikers like the power of positive thinking is that we hear it. We like the words, but we don't really examine it and realize, how do I put that into motion? How do I take this idea of the power of positive thinking and make it happen? Because it's a real phenomenon, but you have to engage it. You can't just think it and think, well, I'm going to think positive thoughts. You have to engage the concept.
You can change your mindset by positive thinking. When you start thinking negative, replace that with the positive thought. We discussed that in our brain show, that you actually create new synapses and stronger thinking about positive things as you think them over and over. So you can replace negative with positive thoughts.
Right. If you tend to be a negative thinker, that's not something you have to be stuck with.
And cynicism is part of age. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break.
We'll be back shortly. This is Examine Life on KKRN, 88.5 FM on your dial, in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
You're listening to KKRN, and this is Examine Life.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat, and we're talking about happiness tonight.
We going back to an earlier thought that I was talking about, when something gives you pain, suffering, discomfort, or talking about the relativity of happiness, you seek to change it if you're healthy mentally. When you realize the change in its fullness, bingo, that fleeting moment of happiness or joy. To expect a more continuous happiness is seeking after sadness, in my humble opinion.
Which I have a little bit of disagreement with.
And I'm reminded of an old Twilight Zone story, one of the old black and white 1960s versions. It was about a kind of a mean-spirited guy. He was a gambler. He loved the game. He loved pool. He loved cards. And he loved to win. He was a very poor loser. He would get extremely unhappy when he lost, and he was frustrated that he couldn't win more often. And in my opinion, he was out of balance. And one day, he's in an altercation with another guy, and he gets shot. He wakes up in a room. He doesn't remember what happened to him very clearly yet, but in the room, there's a pool table, and there's a card table. He is walking around trying to wake up and understand what's happened to him, and so he gets bored. He looks at the pool table, and he racks the pool balls, and he takes a shot. And immediately, all of the balls reflect and bounce off each other, and they all go into pockets from that one shot. And he's amazed, and he smiles, and he's happy, or so he believes. He racks them again, and he takes a shot. And the same thing happens. They all go into the pockets from that one shot. So he's starting to think at this point he may have died and gone to heaven. So he goes over to the card table and he shuffles the cards and he draws out five and they turn up with a royal flush. The 10, jack, queen, king, and ace of spades. He shuffles the cards again. The same thing happens. He shuffles them and deals them as if he were playing with five other players. And only his cards turn out the same way. To make a long story short, he finally starts to become bored and then angry. He notices a man is in the room, and the man explains to him what's happening. He realizes then that he did in fact die, but it wasn't heaven that he went to. Winning all the time, being happy all the time, just is not sustainable.
True. But the idea that we have to have these horrific strifes in life precludes us from having happiness because there's nothing to compare it to.
When you add horrific, I agree with you, but that's not where I was going. I was talking about a balance.
Disappearance.
Horrific sadness gives you horrific happiness when you overcome it. Mild sadness gives you mild happiness.
I think you can have spontaneous happiness by just thinking of an event that caused you great happiness. And every time you think of that event, it will bring you happiness. That day your child is born and the happiness that you get from having a healthy, happy little boy or little girl stays with you your lifetime.
And the reason is because you're happy about that because it's not a sick or unhealthy child.
That's true, but you didn't experience that part. You experienced that happiness. So you can return to that moment at any point in your life to regain that little tiny sense of happiness, even if it's just for the moment.
Little tiny, yes, I agree.
I just don't think you...
When your child gets sick and their fever gets way high and you start worrying about that and then it breaks, you're very happy.
Well, a lot of that is a sense of relief then nothing bad's going to happen.
You could put whatever labels you want. That's the relativity of happiness.
Well, I would call that
relief. You were just ordinarily happy that you had a kid. Then they get really sick. You get really scared. They get well. You get really happy. That's the balance.
Watching them play in the sandbox can bring you happiness.
Sure.
It's their
or
contentment.
Joy.
Yeah, their contentment. Sometimes watching a child eat an ice cream cone can, you know, bring happiness to you. The joy, the sense of, you know, their delight in what they're doing.
Oh, yeah, especially when they get it all over their face.
Yes, you can get happiness out of someone else's happiness. It's a contagious type of thing. You see a child playing with a puppy, and it's a happiness that you know they're both enduring that you have a great sense of happiness from.
We could have this discussion forever.
Yeah, it's a perspective thing.
Let's talk about stress.
Oh, no, not stress. Stress is probably the biggest happiness killer there is.
And stress is all relative, too?
Yes, it's the biggest negative influence in our lives. And it's about expectations. Stress is about expectations. We have them of others, and others put them on us.
It's kind of about imagination, too. I remember when I used to be a stressful person, I actually took a class at a college on stress management. And the first week's homework assignment, and this was back in the ancient days when we didn't have answering machines.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
The first week's homework assignment was one time that week you had to let the phone ring 5 times, which I found out was highly stressful, but I really didn't examine it. The next week, the homework assignment was to let the phone ring until it stopped one time that week. And I started to stress the first time that happened, and then I finally had an aha moment and realized I was working full-time, I was going to college full-time, I was gone a lot, and somehow the sky had not fallen, even though the phone had probably rang a lot of times, and I wasn't there to answer it. That was an epiphany in my life that from that moment forward, stress was a much different experience for me.
Well, a lot of our stress is based on our expectations of others, that we feel disappointment or we angry or we have feelings of frustrations towards that person. Or if someone puts expectations on us, our parent, our relative of any kind, our boss, and we don't fulfill that expectation, then we have a sense of inadequacy, guilty maybe even for not living up to someone else's expectation. And this causes us stress. Even though you may not feel it, you're feeling stress.
And that's another version of that idea that you need someone else to make you happy. You need to be happy within yourself, and their thoughts about you or expectations of you should not be the thing that makes you happy, because you can't control that.
I remember someone once quoting to me, "Let no man make or break your day. You choose your day." And that goes back to don't let others influence your outlook, your perception of happiness or disappointment. Don't let them affect you that dramatically that it ruins, makes or breaks your day.
Dr. Ben Carson's mother, just a wonderful woman. If you should read about his history, his childhood. She used to recite a long poem to them and would always end it with, "You are the captain of your own ship."
Yes. And I think we forget sometimes that we do have these horrific expectations of ourselves even. You know, we plan a day that we're trying to crowd way too much in. We've got children, we've got jobs, we've got other responsibilities. We're trying to get the kids to the dentist, all of these things. And then at the end of the day, we're miserable because we didn't get one thing done.
Right.
And it's our own expectations that we put on ourselves that causes all of this stress. And had you not put all those expectations and you had a reasonable time element to get things done, you wouldn't have near the stress.
It's a lot of the things that you think are imminent that have to be handled right now, they don't have to be. And stress is something, when you try to suppress the feelings that you get by things that stress you, it's just going to come out in other ways and it's going to be unhealthy. But if you examine the stressor and how you feel about it, in most cases you'll come to this realization that you're imagining this effect that it's having on you. It's not real. And that's the healthy way to reduce stress, because it's no longer an object of stress.
And stress affects your heart. It affects your ability to lose or gain weight. It affects your longevity. They know that it affects your DNA, that stress is inflammatory causing, which we all know that is the worst thing possible for any of us, is inflammation anywhere in our body. So they've proven that stress is a trigger for many, many, many of our problems, health problems, as well as social problems, because we let that stress build and build and build before we do anything about it.
And it's mismanagement. I don't call it stress anymore. I usually call it mismanagement of stress. Is a fundamental factor in many autoimmune disease states. Years of stress mismanagement can end up with autoimmune diseases.
And some of it has to do with time management. It's not that you need to manage your time better, as don't put so much into each day that you can't possibly get it done. You know, we're running fast in our society as it is. We have traffic congestion. We have weather. We have all of these things that affect our day, and we need to not put so much pressure on ourselves to get it all done. It's not all or nothing.
Right. It's priorities, and it's things people have talked about many times before, prioritizing. And we really all need to do that, but part of prioritizing is realizing which things are truly important and which things are not. And we, so many things that are kind of trivial, we give them such importance, and by their nature, that's going to be a cause of stress in our life.
One of the things about aging, a lot of people say aging is stressful. Well, it's definitely not for the faint of heart. It's very difficult to age, but still, aging brings freedoms. One of the things, your children are raised, they're usually on their own, they're making their own lives, and of course you worry about them, but they're not underfoot every single day where you have their problems are also your problems, like when you're raising children.
Right, it's more fun to kind of spoil them a little bit and let their parents stress over it.
Yes, yes, spoil those grandchildren. But you, as you age, you have less of those stresses, and they're finding studies show that as you age, you get happier. And a lot of this is because of stress reduction. You learn how to manage it better.
There was a new research that's been out on the internet from the University of Alberta that talks about that, that does the actual statistical research. And that people in the study were actually happier in their earlier 40s than they were in their late teens and early 20s. And even in part of their 30s and 40s, when there was a statistical dip in happiness or cheer, even at that time, they were still happier than they were in their 20s. And a part of it, I think, is especially today, we give kids this expectation of entering the workforce halfway to success already, instead of letting them be a wage slave and work hard for practically nothing and learn about life and learn about the tough parts of things. We give them these high expectations, and they think they're depressed, and they're really just being faced with real life, and they need to deal with it.
And it goes back to expectations. We have too high an expectation. We get disappointed, and it causes us stress. And aging, ironically, is one of the, maybe the wisdom part of aging, is learning that you don't have to put up with it. You can back away. As you retire, you don't even have anyone to answer to. I know a lot of people, as they get into their mid-50s, they don't really care what other people think about them anymore. They're not so concerned about their appearance. Not to say they're slovenly, but it's not as critical as when you're younger. You let go of that. I have to look perfect. I have to behave perfect. All of that seems to diminish as you get older.
Well, I think it does depend on the person. Statistically, that's probably true of some kind of majority, but it's how much you develop your personality and start to rely on yourself that occurs. Some people do that at a young age, but statistically more older people are going to do it because they finally realize at some point that happiness is from within. And so when you realize it's from within, that's when you automatically stop worrying as much about what people think of you, because you know that that's not the source of happiness.
And some people, as they age and they fall into illness, they become despondent or depressed. If you've suffered a severe illness at any age, I think it can cause you to be depressed, but it's temporary. You know, life will continue. This too will pass. You'll get over it. You'll get healthy, and things will turn around. And you, if you have that optimistic outlook, you will come out much better on the other side.
And I have met people many times in my career who actually it didn't end. The illness was continuous. And I've seen lots of creative ways. I've seen some people who succumb emotionally to it, and they are depressed for the rest of their life. But I've met many with some pretty severe illnesses. I met one woman who had had very bad skeletal damage from an auto accident 20 years before. And during the course of my time with her, off and on for several years, in the last time that I saw her, she had been for several years on narcotic pain medication chronically. And she was off the medication the last time I saw her. And I asked her why that was. How could she do that? And she said, I had to make a simple choice. I had to live with the pain or half live with the medication. And I hurt all the time and I'm happy.
Yes, it's part of your perspective, is that happiness. We have a friend who has suffered a brain tumor last fall, and they told him, you know, it'd be 6 months, and as soon as they did the surgery, that the tumor would regrow, and the chemo and the radiation would make his life miserable. And I just talked to him over the weekend, and he was telling me how fabulous he feels, that he has a very positive outlook, that things have not gone downhill the way he was told that they would. And I think a lot of it is his perspective. He is happy. He is content. He has a sense of contentment right now. He's at peace with the diagnosis, whichever ways it goes. And he has this sense of contentment. I'm happy. It's okay. And I think a lot of the secret to happiness is contentment.
It's imagination. It's that old concept of a coward dies a thousand times.
Yes.
If you have a situation that could be severe either way, good or bad, why assume the worst? Because even if you have, a lot of people don't hope because they say, well, why should I hope and then have my hopes dashed?
Yes.
Well, why not? If you assume it's going to be great, then you have that period of happiness before your hopes are dashed. Either way, if it's going to go bad, your hopes are going to be dashed. But why have a continuous period of misery when you only have to have half of it?
That's right. That's right. You always will have time for sadness and tears and miserableness. So when you have the opportunity for hope and positive optimism, enjoy it while you still have it and can feel it.
There's a saying about that, to plan as if it's going to turn out badly and live as if it's going to turn out great.
And lack of expectations gives you a sense of contentment. You're content with that other person because you don't put, you know, expectations on them. You get content with your life and yourself because you don't put these high expectations on yourself. And suddenly that contentment leads to happiness.
Right. Right. You don't, and you can have some wonderful experiences, people, when you don't assume anything about them. You can have some real surprises that can be a lot of fun.
I read a couple of stories about kidnapped victims or people that have suffered as a victim of crime. And sometimes they refer to their sense of gratitude for what little they have after the event or even during the event, having the ability to believe that someone's looking for you, to have the ability to believe that you're going to survive this, that sense of gratitude is what made them survive it, whatever it was.
And some of that, you know, believing someone's going to come and save you, that's imagination at work. A lot of the misery associated with pain is about imagining what's going to come.
The misery of it.
Animals, you notice, they don't seem miserable when they're in pain, unless it's real intense. They're miserable at the moment, but they immediately get over it because they just lack the simple mechanism of anticipating the next pain.
And the sense of gratitude is optimism. It's a gratefulness that brings you contentment and happiness. It's a strange sense of joy to be grateful for your parents or for your job or grateful for your housing or whatever standard of living that you might have, especially when you see someone else who doesn't have what you have. It gives you a sense of gratitude and a simple sense of contentment, even if it's fleeting.
Actually, what the studies show about gratitude is that those children who are raised, say, with chores, if they want a special dessert, they have to earn it. If they want things, they have to earn an allowance. Kids who are made to work, which some people find abhorrent, are the ones that tend to be grateful.
Yes.
They tend to have gratitude, and they're hard workers, so it's not like they're just grateful because people are giving them things. They're grateful because they have to earn what they get. They just get this attitude of gratefulness. And so children need to be taught that you earn things, and somehow we're losing that.
I think it also gives them a sense of fairness that they have earned this, and someone else is working hard to earn this, say a Girl Scout selling cookies. Okay, and they have this sense of, okay, I'll buy her cookies because I have the money and I know that she's trying to do the same that I just did. So I think there's a sense of fairness in those that achieve things through their own efforts.
Right. It's just a natural mechanism that the sense of gratitude is kind of the opposite of the sense of entitlement. And we hear a lot now politically about the sense of entitlement that people have, but it's true. They have a sense of entitlement when they're given things for long enough. And children who are taught that you only get what you earn tend to not have a sense of entitlement, but to have the opposite, a sense of gratitude.
And I want to touch on a few other things to help us find that sense of peace or contentment or happiness. And some of them are we take for granted. And Steve is in the sleep business, and I want him to touch slightly on sleep because it is the only time that we rebuild our cells in our body.
Well, it's having proper sleep is part of a healthy life in general. Sleep is not being unconscious. Sleep is a very complex series of biochemical, bioelectrical states that your brain goes through, and you have to go through that pattern or you have not slept. You've simply been unconscious. That's the part that deals with sleep apnea and things like that. You have to get it treated even though you think you're sleeping well. The other part is people who think they're living healthy lifestyles. For one thing, those people that eat non-fat diets, it turns out that's very unhealthy. So, you know, quit being so obsessive and eat some fat. But those same people that are kind of the obsessive type that really go overboard about their health are the same ones who generally work so hard that they don't get very much sleep. And that's an essential part of your health, and not just mental health. It's how you fight disease. It is how you learn. It's how your brain ages. So many factors in your physical health are affected by the actual way and number of hours that you sleep.
The other thing you need in your life, and this can come in the form of just affirmation, and that's that give yourself a break. Tell yourself, reward yourself with gratitude for your accomplishments. Be positive about yourself. It makes you happier if you acknowledge your achievements and the good things about yourself. If you're generous, if you're kind, if you're helping the neighborhood, those that are shuttered, that live alone, you might take firewood, to help them, whatever, a pie, whatever. This is something that you share and oftentimes can lead to laughter. And laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier about giving, and it really is. The Dalai Lama wrote a whole book called The Art of Happiness. And essentially in that book, what he describes is the happiness you get from helping other people. And we talked before about how it's even more invigorating when you help someone, but they don't know it. And you can't do that all the time, but it's just a great feeling. It's kind of a secret you have between you and yourself.
And that is, you can affirm that in yourself, that you are a good person and you're, worthy of all the things that you have in life and that you'll continue along that path. Another thing is we touched lightly on laughter. Laughter with friends, laughter from a movie. This is medicinal laughter. I mean, this is like having a glass of wine. Laughter is very good for you and it releases stress.
There's a great movie that was made probably in the 70s, and it was a true story about a, I think he was a publisher, might have been a writer, Norman, I don't think it was Mailer, but I can't think of his name, but he had a disease that was musculoskeletal in type, and his doctors told him that it always ended up with this stiffness that you wouldn't be able to move at all, and that he was going to end up that way. And he turned out to be a unique case, but he had done some research on laughter. He was very rich, so he was able to get a hotel room and not have to stay in the hospital, which was step number one. But he decided to surround himself with things that made him laugh and with positive attitudes, and there were some great anecdotes in the movie. And he did, in fact, beat it, and he was unique in that, and he did it with laughter and positive thinking.
And happiness is kind of an emotion, and when you think about how laughter, a good hard belly laugh, it's just, I don't know, it just makes you happy. And you'll cry with joy because whatever that laughter leads to, and it's infectious. You'll get someone else laughing. Watch movies that make you happy. Going to weddings or births, that causes most of us to be happy.
Yeah, and practice a fake laugh that sounds really genuine, and then just do it when you're in with a bunch of people, and it's amazing the effect it has on them. You don't have to be looking at anything or even indicating that something external made you laugh. Just start laughing with that scripted laugh that you've developed, and it's hilarious what it'll do with people.
Read books that make you laugh, and laugh out loud when you read them. It's good for you, and it contributes to that sense of happiness. Happiness is partially a sense of well-being. And all of these things we've talked about today have in common is it gives you a sense of well-being. And that's vital to your longevity.
Right. And to find out what makes you happy, because different things make different people happy. I know some very competitive people that are only really and truly happy when they're competing. There's nothing wrong with that. There are good and bad ways to compete. But that person needs to not feel uncomfortable about being a competitor, someone that has to win.
And a hobby can make you happy. The sense of creativity, some accomplishment, making something or doing whatever it is you do that is your hobby. It doesn't have to make you money. It doesn't have to, you don't have to give it away as a gift. It just makes you happy, your sense of accomplishment. That's why we have hobbies, is it's supposed to bring you a sense of joy and comfort.
And it should always be a greater and greater challenge. If you have a hobby that you've become so adept at that it's not a challenge, you'll get less happiness from that than you will from a new hobby of something you're not familiar with, because you get that sense of accomplishment again. It's not just a rote.
And there's something that is free that you can give away that makes others happy, and that is a smile. They don't cost you anything, and they don't cost anyone else anything. Give them away. They're free.
And I've experimented with this when I wanted to be mad, driving down the road in my car, and trying this experiment of putting a smile on my face when I wanted to be angry, and you cannot stay angry that way. We tried an experiment in my house once that I learned from a Buddhist hospice book, that when anybody in the house, when any two people get into a discussion that becomes too serious, they have to both put on a pair of the Groucho Marx glasses. It has an amazing effect.
It's funny. It reduces it down to laughter.
You cannot keep a serious conversation going when you have those glasses on.
On this program are those of the host, the guests.
And this has been Examine Life. We hope you've enjoyed our show.
Our email is
examinelife@kkrn.org. examinelife@kkrn.org. Please email us and support your community-based radio. KKRN 88.5 FM on your dial.
Good night.